Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Well, throughout our region and the country, we are seeing an uptick in gun violence. Officials are trying to get a better understanding of what's really going on in our communities and out on the streets. And as the summer months are approaching and concerns about that violence begin to mount, we sit down tonight with local activists to share with us what they believe the root of the problem to be. If you have some concerns or you have some questions, we want to hear from you tonight. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight, Stuart Anderson, he is the founder of Families and Friends of Incarcerated People, and Lauren Renford, co-founder of Pathways to Power. Again, we'd like to hear from you tonight. Phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lauren Renford, gun violence seems to be up, not only in our community, but what's being reported around the country in New York and Miami and other big cities. It is on the rise in cities and communities across the nation. What do you make of what's happening and what we should be bracing for this summer?
Well, first, thank you for having me. Hi, everyone. My name is Lauren Renford. I think it's interesting to note first that gun violence has not decreased during the entire pandemic that we have been suffering through and are still suffering through. We talk every day about our main priority of ending the pandemic and getting people vaccinated, but one of our most pressing epidemics of gun violence are still rampant on our streets, taking away our young ones in D.C. and in other major cities all across the nation. And unfortunately, it's only going to get worse this summer when cities are opening back up. And it's really going to truly take all of us and all of our efforts to decrease what we're seeing, frankly.
Stuart Anderson, what's your take on what we're seeing around the nation and even in our area?
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be able to first represent Family and Friends of Incarcerated People, but also to represent the consortium that has given birth to one of the first steps, I think, that needs to happen. The gun violence, we know what it is. We know there are too many guns on the street, and yes, we need to get guns off the street. But in D.C., we are unique. And we're unique in that we have a whole bunch of tools in our arsenal to affect change as it relates to guns and guns violence. And the thing that I want to say is the problem is that all of the tools that we have are not being utilized in unison. We need synergism. And so I want to commend the First Friday group, which gave birth to a consortium that was the impetus for the first inaugural gun violence conference that Lauren's group was a part of as well. And it's through that effort that we've been able to try to do what we believe needs to be done, and that is unify all of the efforts. You know, we have so many groups. There were over 60 groups involved in this first inaugural kind of end the violence or gun violence. And all of them came together to talk about what needs to be done. So now that we've thrown the egg on the wall, we got to now get busy and implement this thing with some synergism.
And how do you do that, Stuart? Because the plan sounds good, right? But the implementation is always kind of the rub, right? Especially when you're trying to bring groups together and have sort of a consensus of thought, which is kind of an oxymoron in many ways.
How about that? I understand that completely. And the thing is, Reverend Anthony Motley over in Ward 8, he and I sat down, I don't know, 3 years ago, and we started having breakfast at the IHOP. And we had the idea of bringing these groups together. Then we were focused primarily on those governmental entities, the Cure the Streets model and the One's office trying to make sure that they came to the meetings along with some of the grassroots organizations. And loosely it worked, but it didn't work. And part of why I think it didn't work was, you know, that idea of, man, I'm trying to get this grant money. You know, mm-hmm. We got to get to the point to where, and I thought that the mayor did a great thing in creating the position that Linda Holly Hopper is currently in to address some of this stuff to try to, I'm assuming, and this is just my assumption, I don't know, I'm not in that inner conversation, but that this building blocks model that DC now has is an effort to do just that, to bring together all of the different organizations that are working to address the violence all across our city. And we do it in our city. We can begin to get the alliances and the Wire and some of the other organizations that we don't often hear about to work in unison in addressing violence. See, it's okay for you to be addressing it in your area and for me to address it in my area, but I'm only dealing with the people in my area who's shooting at the people in your area.
Mm-hmm.
And the people in your area, that's who you're dealing with. They shoot. We got to bring them together. And so we can't bring them together until we can bring the personnel from the One's office together with the personnel from, say, the March for Our Lives or the Peace Walk DC people together. Well, we got to be able to do that, and then they see us doing it. Man, can you imagine 40 organizations if all they got is three people apiece? That's 120 people on the ground at one time in any particular one area.
Well, Lauren, you are a co-founder, I think, of one of those organizations that Stuart is talking about, your Pathway to Power, and you deal with D.C. youth. You talk to them about what's going on out there in their lives and the violence that we are seeing in the streets. We just reported today that a 13-year-old girl pled guilty to a murder charge in terms and reference rather to the carjacking that took place last month in front of Nats Stadium. Two teenagers, 13 and 15. This is not necessarily gun violence, but it's still violence that we're seeing out in the streets. What in your conversations with young people, what is it that you're seeing? I mean, we're seeing these reports of these young people with guns that, in these homes. What do you think is happening, especially with our youth, in terms of violence and what our concerns and questions should be?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I co-founded Pathways to Power when I was in high school. I went to Thurgood Marshall Academy in Ward 8. I graduated in 2019. And since then, Pathways has continued in the school with new cohorts of leaders.
So you're what? What are you, 20, 21, 19?
Yeah, 20. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm in college now, a sophomore, but it's crazy hearing them, you know, have their own discussions with their own thoughts and think about how similar they sounded to the year that I was a Pathways leader. There's still conversations about, you know, hopelessness and, you know, the interworkings of, you know, picking up a gun and robbing someone else for their possessions. And we all really think it boils down to, you know, a person's home life and who they're around, you know, the things that they see every day, but most of all, the things that they've normalized.
Mm-hmm.
A big thing that I saw in my high school was, people becoming desensitized, which is easy to do after you grieve people day after day after day. My boyfriend who I lost, whose name was Zaire Kelly, was the first loss that impacted me extremely close. But, you know, if I just sit down and think about, you know, how many people we've lost, not even young people, you know, that's disheartening in it. It's easy to think that your life doesn't matter because of that.
Did you lose your boyfriend to gun violence, Lauren?
Yes, I did. Yes, mm-hmm. He was walking home from a college preparatory program around 8 or 9 p.m. and he got caught in a robbery attempt that turned fatal.
Stuart, what it seems that one of the central issues, and I don't think we can really not address this, it's guns and how they contribute to this whole equation of violence. Richard Rosenfeld, he's a criminologist at the University of Missouri in St. Louis. He said, if it were not for the proliferation of firearms through our society and in our big cities, we would not have seen the big jumps in homicide that we've seen over the last year. And so you talked about getting these groups together, right?
Right.
Would you agree that guns in our community may be the major issue that we're dealing with, number one? And if so, what do we do about that? How do we get the guns out of our communities, out of the hands of young people, really out of the hands of anyone who's looking to do harm? And I know that's not an easy question to answer.
No. For me, that's a really easy question. I just don't have the power to make it happen. Right?
Okay.
You know, I look at some of the spaghetti that was on the wall that falls out from our conversation that talks about normalization of poverty and death and all of that. But number one is the guns. I agree with him wholeheartedly that we got to figure out how do we attack the gun-toting, you know, Second Amendment rights to bear arms people and say, hey, we got to do better at how we as a society deal with the issuing of weapons. I think in a society such as ours, and we're on this national platform now, because when you start talking about what do we do about guns, we got to do it on the national level for it to affect us here in the district. Sometimes we don't get that, right? And so most of the groups that came together, they want to deal with the normalization of poverty and death. And I like to do that as well. But definitely, we got to attack the National Association for Weapons and all of that. We got to tear that down. We got to dismantle that. We got to say, yeah, you can have guns, but we got to stop having so many guns. Because I'm a King Ike, right? You know, I also am one of the people behind the National annual Martin Luther King Peace. And so King talked about demilitarization of things, right? He wasn't just talking about law and force. He talked about we just doing too much weaponry. Mm-hmm. We got to get rid of the weaponry. And that's a fight in Congress. That's also a pivotal piece for statehood for D.C. We have to attack good old Republicans that's fighting to keep that gun stuff in place. We got to get the guns off the street. They are the number one issue that we have. We got less guns, we got less murders. That's what I believe.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking about really protecting our communities, how to be safe in our communities, especially as it begins to heat up and the summer months start coming upon us and we're trying to keep our communities safe. How do we do that and decrease the violence in those communities? That's what we're talking about tonight. If you have a question, if you have a comment on how that violence can be avoided or at least diminished, we'd like to hear from you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Or if you unfortunately have experienced or been close to some violence and you have some advice or some thoughts on that and what can be done about it. Again, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lauren, I'm going to go back to a comment. The police chief in Miami said, listen, he doesn't want to admit it, and he didn't want to say it, but he thinks this summer is going to be a long one for American people. He thinks it's going to be a rough summer in terms of violence, because folks have been cooped up in their homes during the pandemic. Now they're out. And though robberies have been down, homicides were up, but robberies were down because a lot of businesses were closed. So I'm going to go back for a minute and ask you about, number one, you talked about your personal experiences with gun violence, right? And you're 20 years old, only 2 years out of high school. What were you hearing while you were in school, and what are you even hearing now about how some of these young folks get their hands on weapons? Were you ever hearing any stories about where the guns were coming from or how young people were getting access to weapons?
Yeah, so we have also discussed a lot about that and the fact that you cannot go to a store in D.C. and buy a gun. Like, we don't have any of those. So I mean, obviously, the guns on our street are illegal ones. And if it's not guns, it's knives, it's, you know, pocket knives and other things that people can use to harm people.
I want you to hold your thought there, Lauren, because we've got the music mm-hmm. playing, which means we got to take a break. But I want you to pick up on what you're saying on the other side. So we're going to take a break. But don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone, hang there, Ellie. We're going to get to you. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on WHUR. We'll continue on SiriusXM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 on your analog radio. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Lauren Renford, you were talking about what you were hearing or what your exposure has been to young folks like yourself, not necessarily you getting a weapon, but specifically, you know, with guns. Were you hearing, was there ever any talk about where these guns were coming from when they got into the hands of young people and teenagers? You were explaining.
Mm-hmm. I apologize for talking over the music.
No, that's okay. It just happens.
No, I got you. Yeah, but we hear lots of stories because I think a big piece of decreasing gun violence is going to be holding the people accountable that we know are contributing to that problem.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of transparency around, honestly, just the symbol of having a gun and it being cool. Obviously, young people are getting guns from their peers, the people around them, and buying them illegally. But when that is attained in that super easy way, it's a symbol of, and a lot of times, manhood. You feel super cool. You feel like you can take a life. So we hear a lot of stories about, you know, just again, that normalization, especially in this day and time where, you know, violence is in everything, like our music and pop culture, and it's the norm now.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'd like you to be part of our conversation tonight. We're talking about violence in our communities, how to best stop it, how to best get it under control, especially as we move into those warm summer months when folks are out and about much more, and there tends to be an uptick in violence in our community. So we want to talk about how we can curb that if possible. Let's go to the phone lines, and sure, Michael is on the line calling from the district. Go right ahead with your question or comment.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'll be quick and brief here. I think this is a really important conversation. I'm a gun owner. I actually have a gun program. And what I'm curious about is, as we talk about and explore possible solutions to gun violence in our inner cities, we saw last year in 2020 a 58% increase in gun ownership by African Americans. Black Americans purchased more firearms, more than white Americans, believe it or not, for the first time ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious, how do we couple this increase in gun ownership by black people? When you look at some of the data on this, some say because of racism, some say because of police violence against black people, and some say they just want a gun now for protection.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you couple that with what we're also seeing in our inner cities? A lot of young black men, a sense of hopelessness, no economic opportunities, no real educational opportunities, a lot of issues at home, which indeed does impact the way one views themselves and others and how they interact in the world writ large. So how do we couple those things together as we try to explore a solution here? Thanks for taking my call.
Great questions. Thank you so much, Michael. Yeah, he laid it out there, Stuart.
Yes.
Here's you have that dichotomy of, especially when we're talking about the African-American community, disproportionately affected by gun violence, right? But yet, Sir Michael quotes statistics saying that gun ownership among African Americans is up by nearly 60%.
Yes.
So what's happening here? How are we seeing this conversion or these two diametrically sort of opposite situations here? We're trying to get rid of guns, and maybe we're saying illegal ownership of guns, and yet we see an uptick in legal ownership among African Americans. What's your take on that?
So first I want to say that there is a culture in this country, a gun culture in this country that must be addressed. In this country, the USA of America has the highest rate of gun ownership in the world. Something's wrong with that. That's first. That is something wrong with the culture, and we have to address and attack that culture while we do some other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is some behavioral stuff that even in this first annual event that we had didn't kind of get addressed. And we can't address everything at one time in the same place. We got to try to attack it from all points, utilizing our all of our tools in the box. So we have to deal with behavior, both the mild-adjusted behavior of people who have been traumatized by poverty.
So, Stuart, though, do you think it's a bad thing that more African Americans are owning guns? Because if in general, if I'm hearing what you say now and even your comments prior to, and you tell me if I'm wrong, you know, your feeling is there are way too many guns in our community. I don't care who's owning them, black, white, right. So
I don't care who's got them. I don't care if we buying them more, unless we preparing to go to war. I don't see that as the answer.
Okay.
To addressing all of the carnage that we are seeing that is the direct result of guns and black folk being the victim of it more so than others. But we also see some of these traumatic situations where one or two long gun shooters who are shooting up a whole lot of people in rural areas too. Mm. So I'm saying we got to get rid of these guns. We got to change this gun culture in America so that people can begin to feel safe without having to get a gun.
I think it's a tough task, Stuart, when we see the gun violence that happened during President Obama's administration, especially in Sandy Hook. I think almost everyone assumed when you saw more than 20 young children, young white kids, you know, murdered in their classrooms in a school in an upscale area, that you would have thought, okay, that's where you're going to see some gun reform take place. And I think when that didn't happen, everything after that, I think folks are really, you know, I hear what you're saying. I've heard what Lauren has said. But it would seem to me that if you can't get legislation after Sandy Hook or after shootings in a theater or even after the Mother AME shootings in South Carolina inside of a church, shootings in Florida inside of a school, I don't really know how you're going to see any gun reform anytime soon. And I would say I'd love to see it, but it's really hard to be optimistic. I'm going to get back to you and let you comment on that, Stuart, and you too, Lauren, in a second. Let's go back to the phone lines, though, for now. I believe that's Ellie is calling from Maryland. Go right ahead with your question or comment.
My question and comment is that maybe they should take a look at who is running their city or their county, because now they can say what they want to say about Mayor Barry or whatever his name was. But if you notice that he had the kids out working and it wasn't all this violent like it is when Mayor Bowser running the county. OK, the kids was working in programs out there. They was cleaning the parks, doing different things like that, you know, which kept them occupied. And then they was happy about making checks or having money, you know, that they can go shopping and different things like this. This is not what this county is doing anymore. To me, the county is basically...
You mean the city?
Yeah, the city is basically robbing Peter to pay Paul. Everybody is talking about getting state, you know, in all this mess. They should be worried about these babies around here. okay? They're doing the job that they want them to do anyway. If they're killing each other off, then that's less that the police got to do.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ellie, for your comments. I will say, just to add this caveat, I know what Ellie is talking about and what Mayor Barry was really known for, his summer youth jobs program. But, you know, the city during parts of the mayor's tenure was dubbed the murder capital of the nation. And so we can't ignore that, whether or not you think that, you know, was an accurate title. We do know that the city, you know, was under siege to a certain extent, and some of that was from the crack cocaine epidemic. But that sort of, you know, if we give a larger picture of it, I think it's important sort of to address that also.
And also we need to also make sure that program that she referenced is still running. It's still up and running. You know, I spoke with the director over there just the other day about how can we get more people in and maybe expand it for a couple more weeks. Mm-hmm. But the program is unveiling as we speak.
And Lauren, what do you think of the summer jobs program? One, were you a recipient of it? And two, what do you see of its worth in terms of keeping, you know, young people busy, giving them a chance to have some money in their pocket, and maybe keeping them away from the temptations of easy money through, you know, violence?
Mm-hmm. So I was actually in the Marion Barry Youth Institute and have been through SYT each summer of my middle school and my high school experience. And I find it ridiculous that we even have to convince people of our city of the significance of the program. During the summer, we learn about leadership, Mayor Barry, and so many people who spearheaded and tried to create a better and safer city. Since Barry's leadership, the program has been underfunded. So I think that says a lot about, you know, our city's leadership right now. Because I think if we can only do one thing, it has to be opportunity for young people.
Mm. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking about combating violence in our communities, and specifically doing so as the summer months are sort of coming upon us, and that's when folks are out. The pandemic is starting to ease, so folks are moving about more and more, and many officials, especially in our larger cities, gone on record saying they are concerned and are not optimistic about a decrease in violence this summer, but actually are expecting to see an uptick in that. So let's go back to the phone lines. Gordon is calling from the district. Go right ahead, Gordon.
Hey, I was saying that it's very hard to get rid of the guns in D.C. because they're easy to get. They're already out in the streets, and the kids are using them.
Why do you think they're easy to get, Gordon? And why do you say that? How is it that they're easy to get?
Well, I mean, I work around the district, and a lot of the times you see, like, especially the young kids, they get an argument. Wherever they go, they can go find a gun easily and come back.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is, if the kids have the guns, it means for them to use it, they need to get the bullets. And Chris Rock once said, if you want to stop the guns from being used, it will raise the price of the bullets. If you can sell a bullet for $500, they're going to think twice before they use that, especially if they don't have an income. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to be a very hard thing, because as fast as you get rid of a set of guns, a new set comes in.
Okay, thank you so much, Gordon. Stuart, do you think the pandemic has had an effect on the violence over the last year and a half? Because these officials in states such as Oregon and Chicago and Minneapolis, they're reporting that robberies, you know, were down during the pandemic because people were sort of, you know, locked in.
Mm-hmm.
But homicides were the exception. You know, they were up. They were up in Portland by like 82%, 70, and they were up by like 72% in Minneapolis, 36% in L.A. during this same time frame. And so I find it interesting where homicides were up, right? Robberies were down. And so now that we're moving out of the pandemic and folks are now getting back out there and we're getting back to sort of what normal in terms of movement, do you have some concerns as we move into the summer months that there will be an uptick in violence as some of these mayors and police officials are assuming are going to happen?
Let me first say that as a director for Family and Friends of Incarcerated People, I for a fact study this period of time every year, pandemic or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of the school year, you pull statistics for ions. I don't care how far you go back, ever since people been in school. When they get out of school at the end of the school year, there's always been an uptick in youth indiscretions.
Right.
Right. It's just something that happens. So that's why we focus on that first 2 weeks after school closes to try to snatch up groups of kids,
mm-hmm.
get them out the city for a minute.
Okay.
But I also want to caveat this with the fact that the gun violence that we are seeing is not a youth problem. I want to make sure that's clear.
Okay.
That is not the case. I'm glad that I'm on here with Lauren, someone who represents a more youthful population, that the violence we're seeing, the gun violence we're seeing and the other stuff we're seeing, it's not a youth problem. Because we got all ages of people doing the shooting. The uptick during the pandemic, right, I believe has a number of different causes,
okay.
reasons, what have you.
And hold that right there, Stuart, because I want you to pick up on the causes. We're going to take a break because the music is playing. We're going to continue the conversation. We're talking about keeping our communities safe, our towns, our cities, states, the nation, really. As we're coming out of the pandemic, there are reports coming from big cities that violence is moving on the upward trend, and many officials in those cities are feeling that it's going to keep moving upward during the summer months. And so we're talking about that tonight, maybe how to combat it, what might be the cause of that uptick. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is Insight. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Stuart, I'm going to let you pick up on your causes in 1 minute, but I did want to go back to the phone lines because we had LaRonda, who's been waiting patiently. LaRonda, you had a question or comment?
Yeah, I was just going to comment on the topic you guys were talking about. I think the gun violence and things like that, like he said, is not just a youth thing because it's shooters all different age and things like that. And I think that to really see some motion and movement, we're going to have to probably like influential, you know, go-go band artists and things like that. They're going to really have to get out and try to reach these people too, you know,
mm-hmm.
people on social media and things like that. Campaign that stuff. It's okay, you know, let people know that it's okay. You know, a lot of people out here looking for hope. You know, so you just got to, like, try to push it in any way that you can. So I think, you know, it don't always got to be, like, the executives and things like that. You got to really get in these neighborhoods. You know,
mm-hmm.
we hate to use the ghetto and all that kind of stuff. But it is what it is. You got to give these people hope. So, and I think that will change a lot of things. Show them to be good Samaritans, you know, just in general. And I think that might curve some things. So that's just what I wanted to say.
Well, thank you so much, LaRonda. And I think she makes a very good point. She's saying, look, you got to have some marketing and you got to do it in a different way. You got to reach the people where they are with the people that they're connected to. So if it's EU, you know, if it's Trouble Funk, it's, you know, if it's, you know, any other go-go bands or any other musicians, pop culture folks in D.C. that can connect and say, hey, look, this is what we want for the summer. We want a safe summer. We don't want guns on the street. If you've got one, turn it in. If it's illegal, you know, give it to the cops or whatever. So I think she makes a very good point. But you were saying before we went to break, Stuart, about what you felt like some of the causes.
I'm trying to figure out whether she got one of them iPhones can see through my iPhone, right? Because, man, one of the reasons, you asked me about reasons why the uptick, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to start at the bottom because of where she ended at, right?
Okay.
Number three on my list of things was messages in the music. That was number three. That was the third thing I was going to say is we got to change the lyrics.
And the music that's out there today.
To change the culture, the gun culture, right? The other thing is access.
Okay, but before you get off of that, so is your point that in the music we're hearing today, it is glorifying gun ownership and violence. Is that correct?
The current music, right?
Right.
Not all of it.
That's right.
You know, but some of it, you know what I'm saying? And some of the music that we daily hear in the byways of the hood are glorifying toting that iron, rolling your homie up and smoking him.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We got to change those lyrics. That was number three. Number two was access to weapons, and we've been talking about that all the time. But we got to do something about access to the guns on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Number one on my list is that we've been bottled up in the house during the pandemic, right? And we've been watching all these good movies and all of that. The portrayal in the movies. I just want to say portrayal in the media is a factor in, because we computers at heart. We got some control of our intricacies, right? But we're recording stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if we keep recording this thing over and over and over again, Sigmund Freud will say, that is what the outcome going to be when this happens.
Hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
I hear
so
you.
The portrayal in the media has to change.
Hmm.
Just like we got to change the lyrics, we got to stop glorifying the guns. I get caught up on some of these bang bang movies too, right? But I know when to turn it off, and we got to figure out how we turn it off more so than not.
And so two of your points point to popular culture. So it was interesting. 202-319-7810. Phone lines are still open. Let's go back to the phone lines. We've got Jackie calling from Alexandria. Go right ahead, Jackie, with your question or your comment.
Jackie, so red with the Alexandria Fatherless Coalition. That's my nonprofit. But I would like to applaud the callers who's calling in. First of all, I think his name is Stuart,
mm-hmm.
to promote synergy is really a great idea. We as folks who've been there and done it, who went to college or who have degrees, we have to learn to work together. It's called the lions working with the wild lions working with the cage lions.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be more, have a clear understanding, it is when folks' life experiences can be able to be used to help the youngins that have improper thinking to think violently. We have to have organizations can help the thinking process. The guns are just a manifestation of the wrongful thinking. My organization, Alexandria Fatherless Coalition, is directing resources, which is on my board is men and women with life experience, been there, done it, and has transitioned in the way they think. So therefore, they can teach the process of transition.
So basically, Jackie, what you're saying is that you've got folks, as you said, who've been through life, been through some struggles, and are using that to reach back. So really what he's talking about, Stuart and Lauren, Jackie, thank you so much for your call, is really mentoring not only young folks, but we're talking about middle-aged folks, too, who've strayed and still need some direction. So it's not all about just the youth, as Stuart had mentioned. And so, Lauren, I wanted to ask you before we leave the program, again, you're 20 years old and you've started this organization, Pathways to Power. How did you even start it? You know, what was your inspiration to put together an organization like Pathways to Power?
Yeah, that's a great question. I honestly acted out of my grief. I mentioned earlier that my first close run-in with violence was losing Zaire. And instead of becoming desensitized and viewing that as just a normal thing that happens, I made it a big goal of mine to turn the pain I was experiencing and my community was experiencing into power. So during my grieving process, I thought that there should be somewhere families can go to remember their loved ones, because at the moment I thought that city leadership was trying to push the ugly part of our history and what's currently happening under the rug. So I started as an individual effort. And eventually I joined forces with my classmates at Thurgood Marshall Academy. We ended up raising $15,000 for a mural called The Limestone of Lost Legacies. It lives in Eastern Market right now. It's right off of 8th Street. And we were able to memorialize five slain teens who were going to school and doing what they were supposed to do during the year of 2017. So that was one of the biggest things we did. And like I said, it still exists. And, you know, our biggest goal is to let young people know that you don't have to accept this, but to also learn from older generations, because this is not a new fight at all. I know so many people in the city who were in the same predicament as I am and fought for the same things. I am right now, including Mr. Anderson, who is still fighting strong. So, that's how I founded Pathways and how it sustains to us.
Well, as we wind down our last minutes of this important conversation, Stuart Anderson, I want folks to be sure to know how they can get in touch with you or your organization if they'd like so.
So the first thing I want to say is I want to thank Daily Drum for amplifying the work of community organizations such as Lauren's organization. You know, I followed it from its inception and everything over there at Thurgood Marshall. But you can get the family and friends of incarcerated people. I want people say, Stu, what you do? I want you to go look at my website. They say, Stu, what do y'all do? How do y'all do? I want you to go look at the website. So go to F as in Frank, O as in Olivia, I as in India, P as in Paul, like in the Bible, .world. That's it. Go FFOIP.world. Look at the website. You'll find me. Look at the website, and you will see all of what we try to do through family and friends of incarcerated people. It will lead you to some of the work that I'm doing with an organization called CRAVE and the Anacostia Coordinating Council. You can get to me through that. Number's 202-889-4900. It's the Anacostia Coordinating Council, ACC. Again, that number's 202-889-4900. And there's a community code.
Well, I want to make sure we can get Lauren in. Stuart and Lauren, how can folks get in touch with you or your organization if they'd like so?
Yep, our Instagram is at Pathways, the number 2 power. And then our website is Pathways, the number 2 power.org.
Lauren Renford, co-founder of Pathways to Power. Stuart Anderson, founder of Families and Friends of Incarcerated People. We thank you both for joining us tonight. Very important conversation. Thank you for your insights, and thank you so much for your expertise and all that you are doing out in our communities. Thank you once again. That's the Daily Drum for this Thursday, June 3rd. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Have a great night.